From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
In the long run, Americans have good reason to be confident in our economic strength. Despite corrections in the marketplace and instances of abuse, democratic capitalism is the best system ever devised.
President Bush delivers a primetime address warning the nation's entire economy is in danger if the Fed's proposed $700 billion bailout's not approved. He's holding an emergency summit at the White House today with congressional leaders as well as John McCain and Barack Obama. McCain says he'll temporarily suspend his campaign and wants the first presidential debate to be postponed. Obama just says no. We'll speak with independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader. Then Democracy Now! Interviews the Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
البته آقای بوش خیلی علاقه‌مند یه جنگ جدیدی را بندازه.
Of course, Mr. Bush is very interested to start a new war.
اما با دو تا مانع بزرگ مواجهه.
But he confronts two big barriers.
یک ناتوانی عملیاتی.
One is the incapability in terms of maneuverability and operationally.
ایران یک کشور بزرگه.
Iran is a very big country.
کشور قدرتمند.
A very powerful country.
و قادر است از خودش دفاع.
Very much capable of defending itself.
Today, part one of our interview with the Iranian president on U.S.-Iran relations, Iran's nuclear program, the threat of war with the United States, human rights in Iran, and more. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The White House is scrambling to push through its $700 billion Wall Street bailout by the end of the week. On Wednesday, President Bush made a national appeal for Americans to support the plan. In a primetime address, Bush said the package is needed to save what he called an economy in danger and avoid, quote, a long and painful recession.
Financial assets related to home mortgages have lost value during the housing decline, and the banks holding these assets have restricted credit. As a result, our entire economy is in danger. So I propose that the federal government reduce the risk posed by these troubled assets and supply urgently needed money so banks and other financial institutions can avoid collapse and resume lending.
Bush is set to hold meetings today with top congressional leaders, as well as presidential candidates John McCain and Barack Obama. On Wednesday, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson said the administration had agreed to a Democratic proposal to limit executive compensation at government-rescued firms. Paulson announced the concession during a second consecutive day of congressional testimony. Federal Reserve Chair Ben Bernanke told lawmakers the bailout would help stave off economic chaos.
I urge the Congress to act quickly to address the grave threats to financial stability that we currently face. Stresses in financial markets have been high and have recently intensified significantly. If financial conditions fail to improve for a protracted period, the implications for the broader economy could be quite adverse.
Other congressional testimony painted a skeptical picture of the Wall Street bailout. Speaking before the House Budget Committee, Congressional Budget Office Director Peter Orszag said the bailout could actually worsen the financial crisis. Orszag testified the bailout could trigger broader economic collapse because of the assets of struggling financial firms could have even less value than currently believed. In an interview with the Washington Post, Orszag said, quote, "The key question is, what are we buying and what are we paying for it?" Meanwhile, the FBI has confirmed it's launched a fraud investigation against 24 Wall Street firms. The probe is said to focus on whether corporate executives helped give a misleading picture on their company's financial woes. As the bailout talks continue, congressional leaders are also quietly negotiating a more than $600 billion government budget bill. Earlier this week, Democrats caved to Republicans on allowing a 25-year oil drilling ban to expire. The measure also includes a new record in funding for the Pentagon, $488 billion. Meanwhile, tomorrow's first presidential debate is up in the air after McCain said he would suspend his campaign to focus on the economic crisis. In what Democrats are calling a transparent political stunt, McCain said the first debate should be delayed.
It's time for both parties to come together to solve this problem. We must meet as Americans, not as Democrats or Republicans. And we must meet until this crisis is resolved. I'm directing my campaign to work with the Obama campaign and the Commission on Presidential Debates to delay Friday night's debate until we have taken action to address this crisis.
Campaigning in Florida, Obama said he would reject McCain's plea to delay the debate.
It is going to be part of the president's job to deal with more than one thing at once. I think there's no reason why we can't be constructive in helping to solve this problem and also tell the American people what we believe and where we stand and where we want to take the country.
McCain's delaying attempt comes as his ties to the financial industry are under increased scrutiny. Reports have emerged showing the lobbying firm of McCain's campaign manager, Rick Davis, continued to receive monthly $15,000 payments from the troubled mortgage giant Freddie Mac until last month. The New York Times reports the firm, Davis Manafort, appeared to do little work for the company, but was kept on the payroll because of Davis's close ties to McCain. McCain has previously denied Davis's links to Freddie Mac. The disclosure follows revelations Davis was paid nearly $2 million to serve as president of an advocacy group set up by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. As president of the Home Ownership Alliance, Davis earned more than $30,000 a month for 5 years to beat back regulatory challenges as they began buying riskier mortgages with implicit federal backing. A military prosecutor has resigned his position at Guantanamo Bay in protest of a decision to withhold evidence from an accused prisoner. Army Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Vandeveld says his office failed to provide discovery to defense attorneys for an Afghan prisoner set to go on trial in December. Vandeveld wrote, quote, "I'm highly concerned to the point that I believe I can no longer serve as a prosecutor at the commissions about the slipshod, uncertain procedure for affording defense counsel discovery." Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has provided new testimony affirming the White House was actively involved in talks over the CIA's use of torture in the interrogation of prisoners. Signed testimony from Rice and her top legal advisor says administration officials discussed the program over a 2-year period beginning in early 2002. In a letter to the Senate Armed Services Committee, the legal advisor, John Bellinger, said he expressed concern the proposed interrogation techniques complied with international law. In Iraq, at least 35 people were killed in a shooting attack on a group of police and U.S.-backed Sunni militia northeast of Baghdad. At least 20 police officers were among the dead. Meanwhile, Iraq's parliament has passed a long-awaited provincial election law. Lawmakers say the measure will pave the way for elections in 14 of Iraq's 18 provinces by the end of January. The parliament decided to postpone debate on another key national issue, the status of oil-rich city of Kirkuk. Iraqi Arabs, Kurds and Turkmens have all laid claims to control of Kirkuk. Here in New York, the United Nations General Assembly continued with addresses from several Latin American leaders. Cuban Minister José Ramón Machado criticized the U.S. for its crippling embargo on Cuba in light of the recent devastating hurricanes.
Permítame aprovechar la oportunidad para, en nombre del gobierno y el pueblo de cubanos,
allow me to take the opportunity, in the name of the Cuban government and its people, to thank all those countries, organizations, and people who, in one way or another, have contributed honestly and sincerely with resources or with moral support to the efforts of reconstruction undertaken by my government.
De reconstrucción emprendido por mi país. Ello contrasta.
This contrasts with the position taken by the United States that continues to apply the blockade.
Cuba says the total damage from back-to-back hurricanes Gustav and Ike will top $5 billion. The Bush administration's offered a small amount of aid but refused to lift the embargo. Meanwhile, Latin American leaders met on the side of the General Assembly over the ongoing political crisis in Bolivia. Dozens of people have been killed this month in unrest over attempts by oil-rich provinces to declare autonomy. Provincial leaders have rejected Bolivian President Evo Morales's popular mandate to redistribute Bolivia's oil wealth. Morales said he's received broad support with the exception of the Bush White House.
There is much support among the presidents of South America, of Europe. We are waiting for President Bush of the United States to condemn these terrorist acts, these coup-like acts.
In healthcare news, a new study says job-based health insurance premiums have doubled in the last decade. The Kaiser Family Foundation says the increase far outpaces the accompanying rise in inflation over the same period. A leading American Muslim group is calling for a Federal Elections Commission probe into a controversial DVD they say denigrates Islam. The video is called Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West. It's been distributed to some 28 million homes, mostly in battleground election states. The Council for American Islamic Relations wants the FEC to probe whether the DVD's distributor, the Clarion Fund, is really a front for a right-wing group based in Israel seeking to back Republican candidate John McCain. Meanwhile, in Texas, the retrial of a former Muslim charity accused of terrorism financing has begun. The now-defunct Holy Land Foundation for Relief and Development is accused of being a front to raise funds for Hamas. A mistrial was declared last year after jurors failed to reach a unanimous verdict. The Holy Land Foundation was once the largest Muslim charity in the United States. It collected donations for local committees providing humanitarian aid in the West Bank and Gaza. The case relied on Israeli intelligence and disputed documents and electronic surveillance gathered by the FBI over a span of 15 years. And in Minnesota, more than 200 people gathered for a St. Paul City Council hearing on the police crackdown on protesters during the Republican National Convention. Council members heard testimony from protesters who recounted their experiences of pepper spray and abuse at the hands of police. Bruce Nestor of the National Lawyers Guild called for an independent probe into police conduct.
What happened in St. Paul, Minnesota? From really going back to the infiltration and the surveillance 2 years, but from September 1 to September 4 of 2008, had happened in any other country, that's the type of coverage and the description of it we would have read. And I think that you can either be for or against that political suppression, depending where you fall on the political spectrum. But that is an objective description of what happened and of the political content of why people were in the streets, why people were demonstrating, and the political nature of the response that was organized by the $50 million given by the federal government. It was targeted to the use of force and of security forces to suppress political activity, to scare people from coming out into the streets.
More than 800 people were arrested during the four-day convention. More than 40 journalists were also arrested. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And welcome to all of our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world. The Bush administration is intensifying its pressure on Congress to quickly approve a $700 billion bailout of the financial industry, despite warnings from economists and some governmental officials that the bailout could worsen the financial crisis. Last night, President Bush held a primetime address to warn the nation's entire economy is in danger if the bailout is not approved as soon as possible.
The government's top economic experts warn that without immediate action by Congress, America could slip into a financial panic. And a distressing scenario would unfold. More banks could fail, including some in your community. The stock market would drop even more, which would reduce the value of your retirement account. The value of your home could plummet. Foreclosures would rise dramatically. And if you own a business or a farm, you would find it harder and more expensive to get credit. More businesses would close their doors, and millions of Americans could lose their jobs. Even if you have good credit history, it would be more difficult for you to get the loans you need to buy a car or send your children to college. And ultimately, our country could experience a long and painful recession. Fellow citizens, we must not let this happen.
Thursday night's address was the first time in his presidency that Bush delivered a primetime speech devoted exclusively to the economy. His dire scenario about the state of the economy stood in stark contrast to his comments at his last press conference 2 months ago.
I think the system basically is sound. I truly do. And I understand there's a lot of nervousness. But the economy's growing. Productivity's high. Trade's up. People are working. It's not as good as we'd like. And to the extent that we find weakness, we'll move. That's one thing about this administration. We're not afraid of making tough decisions.
Today, the president is holding an emergency summit at the White House with both John McCain and Barack Obama, as well as top leaders for Congress. The Wall Street Journal reports Democratic leaders are hoping to nail down details of the bailout measure early today. On Wednesday, McCain said he would suspend his campaign to deal with the financial crisis. He called on Obama to postpone their debate Friday night, saying he would only attend if Congress approves a bailout package before then. Obama said the debate in Oxford, Mississippi, at Ole Miss, should go on as planned. We're joined on the phone right now by a presidential candidate who was not invited to Friday's debate, independent candidate Ralph Nader. The longtime consumer advocate has been a vocal critic of the Wall Street bailout. Ralph Nader, welcome to Democracy Now! First, let's start off with John McCain announcing that he is going to suspend his campaign once the debate canceled.
Well, I think Senator McCain is showboating. I mean, what's going on in Washington and Congress now as the Bush administration is trying to pull the Constitution out by its roots and demand that Congress give it a blank check without any criteria, without any accountability for $700 billion bailout of Wall Street, is not dependent on whether John McCain returns to Washington other than to vote. I think he's turning his back on over 50 million American voters who expect him to show up in Ole Miss with Barack Obama and who have made arrangements to do so. He talks a lot about honor and commitment. I think he ought to change his mind and get down to Ole Miss.
Ralph, the Democrats are claiming that they've been able to get some key concessions from the administration on its original plan. They say now they're going to cap CEO pay for those who participate in this bailout, and that they're going to get some kind of government participation or investment in these firms, so that if they make profits later on, or these securities make profits later on, the government will be able to participate. But your sense, are these real substantive changes, or is this basically cosmetics on a plan that shouldn't be in place in the first place?
Well, so far, it's wish fulfillment. If you watch what Barney Frank, the chairman of the House Banking Committee, said yesterday, nothing has really been decided. And also, it's not clear at all why a bailout is needed. That's part of the stampede and the panic that Bush and Paulson and Bernanke are pushing Congress toward. You know, it's eerily reminiscent, when you listen to Bush yesterday, of how he stampeded the Congress and the country into the criminal war invasion of Iraq in 2003. I mean, look at all his statements. This could do this. This would do that. Farms failing. Small business. Ta-da, ta-da. The first question we have to ask as citizens is, why is there a need for a bailout? The only conceivable purpose of Treasury intervention, said Roger Lowenstein in the New Republic recently, quote, is to buoy the market using taxpayer funds by paying higher than market prices. After all, if the government merely intended to match the market, what would be the point, end quote. In other words, if these mortgage-backed securities are distressed, well, they're going to fetch a lower price. There's a huge amount of money on the sidelines in Wall Street. Everybody admits that. So as a hedge fund manager basically said, look, if the price comes down lower than what the government is trying to keep elevated, we'll buy this paper. Warren Buffett put $5 billion into Goldman Sachs this week. There's a lot of money to go around. It's quite interesting how the Bush regime is creating its own panic. When the government keeps saying chicken little, the market is going to react in a very nervous manner. It's a reversal of what the government usually does, which is to counsel stability and patience, etc. So the first question Congress should ask in detailed hearings, which are occurring, is simply, why is there need for a bailout? Second is, if there is a need for a bailout, why $700 billion? And third, if there is a need for a bailout, what kind of bailout? Taxpayer equity, so taxpayer can recover if these companies make a profit, they can recover a surplus, perhaps the way they did on the taxpayer bailout in 1979 with Chrysler, where Jimmy Carter demanded that Chrysler issue stock warrants to the Treasury, and Chrysler turned around and the Treasury sold the warrants for $400 million profit. I don't think the Democrats show any nerve that they are going to do anything but cave here. And the statements by Nancy Pelosi are not reassuring, which is, well, it's the Republicans' bill, you know, let them take responsibility for it. That doesn't work. She's the Speaker of the House. The Democrats have got to say, slow down. We're not going to be stampeded into this bill by Friday or Saturday. We're going to have very, very thorough hearings. Otherwise, it's another collapse at constitutional levels of the Congress before King George IV.
We're talking to independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader. We'll come back to this discussion. We'll also be joined by Arun Gupta, who is the editor of The Independent, and put out a letter on the internet that has just set the internet on fire, calling for a major protest today on Wall Street. It has gained steam. Many groups have signed on. Stay with us.
Money in the pocket is food on the table. Food on the table is cash in the till. When the till is loaded, the merchant is able to fill up the counters he has to refill. Money in the pocket can buy what's required. Clothes for the kiddies, a dress for the wife. Money for the doctor, a show when you're tired, is living a normal American life. From the worker to the merchant, the dollar takes a business trip. Then off to the farmer to buy new equipment, and back to the worker in his salary slip. Everybody prospers, the butcher, the grocer. Great is the country and fine is the blend. Must there be depression? The answer is no, sir. Money in the pocket is money to spend. Money in the pocket is food on the table.
Tom Blazer, Money in Your Pocket, here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our guest on the phone with us from Pittsburgh, where he's campaigning, is Ralph Nader, independent presidential candidate. Juan?
Oh, Ralph, you mentioned how the Democrats themselves are being stampeded at this point by the Bush administration. In my column in the Daily News yesterday, I raised how another Democratic leader and another Democratic Congress handled a situation, even a more dire situation, in 1933, on the 2 days after Franklin Delano Roosevelt was inaugurated as president. There were thousands of banks crashing at that point, and he immediately shut down all the banks on his second day in office, called Congress into an emergency session, and over the next 100 days adopted incredible legislation, including the Glass-Steagall Act that we've mentioned quite often on federal deposit insurance, aid to homeowners, farm subsidies, created the Tennessee Valley Authority, all in the midst of a crisis, probably the most progressive amount of legislation in the nation's history. In any period. That's a quite different approach. And he specifically criticized the banks and Wall Street as being at the root of the crisis.
That's right. In those days, they had a serious solvency problem for these banks, which they don't have, by and large, today. And that was admitted by Bernanke yesterday. Basically, Bernanke is saying, well, we're doing this because the banks are contracting their credit, and this is affecting the economy. Well, you can deal with that problem in a far better way than an ill-defined $700 billion bailout with total authority to the Treasury Secretary, with no judicial review, with no criteria, and no reforms. In other words, the Democrats should say, if they're going to concede this bailout, is to say, well, we want comprehensive regulation and disclosure of the financial industry to make sure this doesn't happen again. We want criminal prosecution of the crooks in Wall Street and disgorgement of their ill-gotten gains. We want a securities derivative tax and higher margin requirements to make speculators use their money, more of their money than other people's money, like worker pension funds, to keep down speculation, as well as to produce revenues which might lighten the tax load on working families. And we want to give shareholders control over the corporations they own, and they're not even talking about these kinds of reforms. And this is the best time to get these reforms because this is called the must bill on Congress, in Congress. And if Bush wants his package, he's going to have to sign them. So there's no reciprocity here. It's the usual fairly good questions by the Democrats at the hearings. But because they don't follow through, they don't have adequate leadership, it becomes a kind of posturing. It's really maddening to watch how vague Bernanke and Paulson are in answering one question after another. It's just an evasion where they keep saying, we need to do it, we need to do it.
Well,
and their Chicken Little material is conducted in closed session with Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and the Republican leadership.
Well, Ralph Nader, something that isn't vague are the emerging rallies against Wall Street bailout that are being held today in over 100 cities. In Washington, protesters are gathering outside the Treasury Department at 4 p.m. Here in New York, a protest is set for 4 p.m. as well in Bowling Green Park near Wall Street. The day of action's been partly inspired by an email sent out Monday by New York journalist Arun Gupta. In the email, Gupta described the bailout as the biggest robbery in world history. Arun Gupta is a reporter and editor at the Independent newspaper here in New York. He joins us in the firehouse. You've just been written up in Business Week. Talk about this letter. Talk about what you are putting out there.
Well, I do a good bit of economic writing, and I was trying to decipher the plan this weekend, and it became quickly apparent to me that this is a financial September 11th, that the Bush administration was trying to use the shock of this crisis, this self-induced crisis in this case, to ram through legislation that was highly ill-considered in terms of the actual economic merits on the one hand, and then on the other hand, it was this extreme power grab that would give these huge, sweeping new powers to the Treasury Department. So I wrote up this email. I sat on it overnight because I was hesitant to send it out. I'm a journalist, not an organizer. But after talking with a few people, they felt I should send it out. So I sent it out to about 150 activists, organizers, and media folks that I know in New York City. And it just exploded. You know, I don't take any special credit for it. I was just tapping into this huge amount of anger and resentment that was out there.
And when you say exploded, what was the response?
Well, I talked to people who within 1 hour of me sending it out and then them for I encouraged people, please forward widely. They told me that within less than an hour, they had received it back from five or six different people. By the end of the day, apparently, a lot of big groups started jumping on it, including unions. By the next day, it was being endorsed and variations were being forwarded by True Majority, Code Pink, United for Peace and Justice. And so it was just it really showed the power of the internet in a particular moment.
So talk about these protests that are taking place around the country.
It started as, you know, the idea is like, let's gather in Wall Street, and I thought maybe it'd be a dozen people and we'd be standing on the sidewalk, but now it looks like there'll be hundreds, even possibly thousands. And then True Majority picked up the call along with United for Peace and Justice, one of the main anti-war groups, and they said, you know, let's have these day of actions around the country. So all over the country now, there are going to be protests in various financial centers. I've been getting emails from people, you know, from every single corner of the United States, asking, you know, what's going on, how do we plug in, and so we're just trying to point them to these websites. It's like, look, here's a list of the protests, or you can plan your own event, and this is really coming from across the political spectrum.
And as you said in your email, this is leaderless, there are no main organizations in charge, or no individuals in charge, everyone's just participating themselves.
And that's what's great about it. You know, when people say, who's organizing this, I say, no one. And everyone. This was just a call to self-organize. And, you know, it's like, I'm just going to show up there as just one more person who's against this ridiculous bailout, this giveaway to the rich.
Ralph Nader, who is Henry Paulson? I mean, we know he worked for Nixon, was the aide to John Ehrlichman, the ex-con, the man who went to jail, then went off to Goldman Sachs. He and Alan Greenspan still being considered the economic wise men, even though this all happened under their watch.
That's when you know the system is decayed and corrupt, that the people who brought us this disaster, Robert Rubin, with Bill Clinton pushing through the financial deregulation monster in 1999, which we opposed, which opened the gates for this kind of wild speculation and this casino capitalism, is still an advisor. He's an advisor to Barack Obama. He's an advisor to members of Congress. Henry Paulson cashed out at Goldman Sachs in 2006, $500 million. And now he goes to Washington to bail out his buddies. The public outrage out there is really enormous. The calls coming into C-SPAN yesterday were overwhelmingly against this bailout, this outrageous inequity, this double standard between the guys at the top and the people who are going to have to pay the bills under this bailout, the taxpayers and the consumers. Mr. Gupta is right in the sense that this is leaderless, but it's got to be more than just a rally of protest. It's got to demand something. It's got to be focused. Otherwise, it will fritter away. We've had rallies in Wall Street. It's a great place to have rallies. You can really congregate a lot of people, and the Wall Street guys look out the window, and they can see the people are coming. But the first step is to slow down Congress. Once this bill is passed, and it's a blanket bill, it's only 4 pages, Amy, 4 pages of a $700 billion blank check, transferring congressional authority wholesale, and I think unconstitutionally, to the White House, King George IV at work again. Once it passes, then the chance for comprehensive regulation and all the other changes to make Wall Street accountable instead of allow Wall Street to create a corporate state, or what Franklin Delano Roosevelt called fascism, which is government controlled by private economic power, represented by people like Henry Paulson. Once this happens, it's not going to be reversible.
And Ralph, what about the homeowners who were at the center of this crisis in foreclosure? 1 million Americans have lost their homes in recent years. There seems to be still no clear sense that any kind of bill will actually provide clear relief for people facing the loss of their homes.
You're absolutely right, because Barney Frank was asked about that last night after the hearing, and he said this is a money proposition. If you're going to deal with the homeowners, it's not my banking committee. It's Charlie Rangel's House Ways and Means. In other words, there's nothing in this bill for homeowners. There's everything in this bill to bail out the bankers who actually created this problem with these out-of-control speculative financial instruments.
Cynthia McKinney has offered to debate Barack Obama if he's the only one who shows up at Old Miss tomorrow. Are you also going to make that offer? And Ralph Nader, would you consider, given the stakes of this election, encouraging your supporters in swing states to vote for Barack Obama?
Well, first, I'd be very happy to sit in the seat emptied by John McCain. But I think the stage can handle the only six presidential candidates who are on enough electoral colleges to theoretically win the election. And second, I'm not at all impressed by Barack Obama's positions on this so-called bailout. It's just rhetoric. His Senate record has not reflected that at all. As we campaign around the country, we're now in 45 states plus the District of Columbia, and we're running 5-7% in the polls, which is equivalent to 9-10 million eligible voters. We are going to try to rouse the public in a specific way, laser beam focus on their senators and representatives. When these senators and representatives, if they allow this bailout deal in its general vague manner to pass, when they go back home, they're going to hit hornet's nest. This is a situation where it doesn't matter whether the people back home are Republicans, Democrats, Greens, Libertarians, Nader Gonzalez supporters. There's such a deep sense of betrayal, of panic, of stampede, of surrender, of cowardliness in Congress, that it's going to affect the election and the turnout. I'd like Barack Obama, actually, to support the Nader Gonzalez ticket.
Finally, Arun Gupta, people are bringing old junk to the protest today, records, old clothes, things they don't want to symbolize
That's one of the themes, cash for trash, which is how this bailout bill is being characterized. In other words, that the government is giving the taxpayers good money for these worthless securities. So many protesters are saying, well, let's bring our own trash to Wall Street. We'll create a junk pile and then ask the government to bail us out.
We're going to leave it there. Arun Gupta is the reporter and editor of the Independent newspaper here in New York, organizer of today's protest on Wall Street. There will be more than 100 other protests around the country. We'll report on them tomorrow. Ralph Nader, independent candidate for president, speaking to us on the campaign trail in Pittsburgh. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Juan?
Well, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad addressed the United Nations General Assembly this week, while the International Atomic Energy Agency, or IAEA, is meeting in Vienna to discuss Iran's alleged nuclear program. An IAEA report earlier this month criticized Iran for failing to fully respond to questions about its nuclear activities. The European Union told the IAEA Wednesday that it believes Iran is moving closer to being able to arm a nuclear warhead. Iran could face a fourth set of Security Council sanctions over its nuclear activities. But this week, Russia has refused to meet with the U.S. on this issue. The Iranian president refuted the IAEA's charges in his speech to the General Assembly and accused the agency of succumbing to political pressure. He also welcomed talks with the United States if it cuts back threats to use military force against Iran.
As with every visit of the Iranian president to New York, some groups protested outside the United Nations. But this year, President Ahmadinejad also met with a large delegation of American peace activists concerned with the escalating possibility of war with Iran. Well, yesterday, just before their meeting, Juan Gonzalez and I sat down with the Iranian president at his hotel blocks from the UN for a wide-ranging discussion about U.S.-Iran relations, Iran's nuclear program, threat of war with the U.S., the Israel-Palestine conflict, human rights in Iran, and much more. Today, part one of our interview with the Iranian president. Welcome to Democracy Now!, President Ahmadinejad. You've come to the United States. What is your message to people in the United States and to the world community at the UN?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma ajjal li waliyyika al-faraj wal-afiyata wal-nasr. Waj'alna min khayr ansarihi wa awanihi wal-mustashhadina bayna yadayh. Man salam arz mikunam be mardum Amerika. Payam millat Iran baraye hame millat-ha payam sulh o dosti o baradari ast.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, the President started by reciting verses from the Holy Quran in Arabic. Hello, hello to the people of America. The message from the nation and people of Iran is one of peace, tranquility, and brotherhood.
ما فکر می‌کنیم صلح و امنیت پایدار زمانی اتفاق می‌افته که بر پایه عدالت و بر پایه پاکی باشه.
We believe that viable peace and security can happen when it is based on justice and piety and purity. Otherwise, no peace will occur.
Mr. President, you're faced now in Iran with American soldiers in Iraq to your west, with American soldiers and NATO troops to your east in Afghanistan. And with Blackwater, the notorious military contractor, training the military in Azerbaijan, another neighbor of yours. What is the effect on your country of this enormous presence of American forces around Iran and the impact of these wars on your own population?
طبیعیست وقتی که کنار مرزها جنگ میشه آثار منفی خودش رو بر کل منطقه بر جای میذاره.
It's quite natural that when there are wars around your borders, it brings about negative repercussions for the entire region.
امروز حوزه ناامنی ها به یک محدودی خاصی محدود نمیشه، یعنی به مرزهای خاصی محدود نمیشه. ناامنی به سرعت گسترش پیدا
میکنه. These days, insecurity cannot be bordered, it just extends beyond boundaries.
در دو سال قبل ما چند مورد بمب‌گذاری داشتیم در شهرهای جنوبی. افرادی که بمب‌گذاری کرده بودند تحت نظر دولت‌های اشغالگر در عراق آموزش دیده بودند.
In the past 2 years, we had several cases of bomb explosions in southern towns in Iran, carried out by people who were supervised by the occupying forces in our neighborhood.
در افغانستان هم بعد از حضور نیروهای ناتو تولید مواد مخدر چند برابر شد.
And in Afghanistan, following the presence of NATO troops, the production of illicit drugs has multiplied. It's natural that it basically places pressure on Iran.
هزینه‌های سنگینی برای مبارزه با مواد مخدر بر دوش ملت ایران تحمیل میشه.
Including costly ones in order to fight the flow of illicit drugs.
ما فکر می‌کنیم مردم منطقه خودشون قادر هستن امنیت رو برقرار کنن.
We believe the people in the region are able to establish security themselves.
نیازی به حضور بیگانه ها نیست.
On their own, so there's no need for foreigners and external forces. Because these external forces have not helped the security of the region.
Do you see them as a threat to you?
Well, it's natural that when there is insecurity, it threatens everyone.
I'd like to turn for a moment to your domestic policies and law enforcement in your country. Human Rights Watch, which has often criticized the legal system in the United States, says that under your presidency, there has been a great expansion in the scope and the number of individuals and activities persecuted by the government. They say that you've jailed teachers who are fighting for wages and better pensions, students and activists working for reform, other labor leaders like Mansoor Osanlo from the Bus Workers Union. What is your response to these criticisms of your policies?
من فکر می‌کنم وضعیت حقوق بشر در ایران وضعیت نسبتاً مطلوبی است.
I think that the human rights situation in Iran is relatively a good one.
وقتی که با آمریکا و سایر کشورها مقایسه میکنی.
When compared to the United States and other countries.
البته وقتی به آرمانهای خودمون نگاه میکنیم هنوز ما خیلی کار باید انجام بدیم.
Of course, when we look at the ideals that are dear to us, we understand that we still need to do a lot.
چون ما دنبال آرمانهای الهی و انقلابی هستیم.
Because we seek divine and religious ideals.
اما وقتی مقایسه میکنیم با کشورهای اروپایی با آمریکا شرایط ما خیلی بهتر هست.
And revolutionary ones, but when we compare ourselves with some European countries in the United States, we feel we're in a much better place.
بخش مهمی از اطلاعاتی که این گروه ها میگیرن انتقاداتی است که مخالفین دولت مطرح میکنن.
A large part of the information that these groups receive come from criticisms coming from groups that oppose the government.
در ایران هر سال یه انتخابات هست.
And if you look at it, we have elections in Iran every year.
و این تبلیغات همیشه هست.
And the propaganda is always around too.
ولی واقعیت نداره.
But they're not always true.
گروه ها همدیگر رو متهم میکنن.
Groups accuse one another.
ما کمترین تعداد زندانی ها رو داریم در منطقه و در مقایسه با آمریکا.
But within the region and compared to the United States, we have the smallest number of prisoners.
من که اصولاً علاقه ای نیست در ایران برای استفاده از زندان.
Because in Iran in general, there's not so much inclination to imprison
people. حتی الان قوانین رو داریم بازنگری میکنیم که اصلا زندان رو حذف کنیم.
We're actually looking at our existing laws right now to see how we can eliminate most prisons around the country.
مهم اینه که مردم ایران همدیگر رو دوست دارن. دارن با هم زندگی میکنن. با دولتشون هم زندگی میکنن.
So you can see that people in Iran like each other. They live coexistently and like the government too.
این اخبار بیشتر برای همین گروه ها مهمه. برای ملت ایران اهمیتی نداره.
This news is more important to these groups, not so much for the Iranian people.
امروز ما بیش از 70 میلیون جمعیت داریم.
You have to remember we have over 70 million people in our country.
قوانین هم داریم.
And we have laws.
ممکنه بعضی تخلف کنن طبق قانون دستگاه قضایی رسیدگی میکنه.
Some people might violate it and then according to the law the judiciary takes charge.
در همه جای اتفاق میفته.
And this happens everywhere.
مهم اینه که در ایران کمترین مقدار تخلف از قانون هست.
What really matters is that in the end there are least amount of such violations of the law in Iran.
اینطوره ما تفسیری که میشه تفسیر غلطی است.
The least number. So I think the interpretation of these events is a wrong one.
رابطه دولت و مردم در ایران رابطه بسیار صمیمیه.
The relationship between the people and the government in Iran is actually a very close one.
و انتقاد از دولت هم به طور مطلق آزاد هست.
And criticizing the government is absolutely free for all.
به همین خاطر هر کس هر چی دلش میخواد میگه.
That's exactly why everyone says what they want.
محدودیتی نداره.
There's really no restrictions.
معناش این نیست که اینا واقعیت داره.
Doesn't necessarily mean that everything you hear is always true.
دولت پاسخ هم نمیده.
And the government doesn't really respond to it either.
آزاد است.
It's just free.
Let me ask you in particular about the question of the execution of juveniles. My understanding is that Iran is one of only 5 or 6 nations in the world that still execute juveniles convicted of capital offenses, and that you, by far, you execute the most. I think 26 of the last 32 juveniles executed in the world were executed in Iran. How is this a reflection of the of a state guided by religious principles to execute young people?
اولا در ایران کسی در سن زیر 18 سال اعدام نمیشه.
Firstly, nobody is executed under the age of 18 in Iran.
این نکته اول.
This is the first point.
نکته دوم، سن قانونی در ایران با سن قانونی در کشور شما متفاوت.
And then please pay attention to the fact that the legal age in Iran is different from yours.
دلیلی نداره که سن قانونی در همه جا 18 سال باشه.
It's not 18 and it doesn't have to be 18 everywhere.
هر سن قانونی متفاوت.
So it's different in different countries.
من از شما سوال میکنم، اگر یک کسی مثلا 17 سال و 9 ماهش باشه، خدای نکرده یکی از بستگان شما رو به قتل برسونه، شما از حق بستگانتون گذشت خواهید کرد؟
I'll ask you, if a person who happens to be 17 years old and 9 months kills one of your relatives, will you just overlook that?
We'll continue our interview with Iranian President Ahmadinejad after break. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez as we return to our interview with the Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
I'd like to ask you, recently the Bush administration agreed to provide Israel with many new bunker buster bombs that people speculate might be used against Iran. Your reaction to this decision by the Bush administration? And there have been numerous reports in the American press and of the Bush administration seeking to finance a secret war against Iran right now.
حالا ما فکر می‌کنیم دولت آمریکا و بعضی متحدینش رژیم صهیونیستی رو به بمب اتم هم مجهز کرده.
Well, we actually think that the US administration and some other governments have equipped the Zionist regime with a nuclear warhead for those bombs too.
ما چی باید بگیم به دولت آمریکا؟
So what are we to tell the American administration?
دولتی که همه مسائل رو میخواد با جنگ حل کنه.
A government that seeks a solution to all problems through war.
یعنی منطقش منطق جنگی است.
Their logic is one of war.
تو این 20 ساله بودجه های نظامی آمریکا چند برابر شده.
In the past 20 years, Americans' military expenditures have multiplied.
فکر میکنم مسئله رو از جای دیگه باید حل کرد.
So I think the problem should be resolved somewhere else.
فکر میکنم مردم آمریکا باید تصمیم بگیرن راجع به آینده خودشون.
Meaning the people of America themselves must decide about their future.
آیا دوست دارن به نام اونها جنگ رو اندازی بشه و ملت ها کشته بشن؟
Do they like new wars to be waged in their names that kill nations?
یا پولشون خرج جنگ بشه؟
Or have their money spent on warfare?
فکر میکنم مسئله رو باید اونجا حل.
So I think that's where the problem
the
can be addressed.
The investigative reporter Seymour Hersh said the Bush administration held a meeting in Vice President Cheney's office to discuss ways to provoke a war with Iran. Hersh said it was considered possibly a meeting to stage an incident that it would appear that Iranian boats had attacked U.S. forces in the Straits of Hormuz. Do you have any evidence of this?
ببینید از این مطالب زیاد منتشر میشه.
Well, you have to pay attention to the fact that a lot of this kind of stuff is published.
دلیلی ندارم عکس العملی نشون بده.
There's no need for us to react to it.
البته آقای بوش خیلی علاقه‌مند یه جنگ جدیدی را بندازه.
Of course, Mr. Bush is very interested to start a new war.
اما با دو تا مانع بزرگ مواجهه.
But he confronts two big barriers.
یک ناتوانی عملیاتی.
One is the incapability in terms of maneuverability and operationally.
ایران یک کشور بزرگه.
Iran is a very big country.
کشور قدرتمنده.
A very powerful country.
و قادر است از خودش دفاع.
Very much capable of defending itself.
دومی مانع آمریکاست.
The second barrier is the United States itself.
ما فکر می‌کنیم در آمریکا اوغلای فراوانی وجود دارن که مانع خواهند شد از کارهای غیر عاقلانه.
We think there are enough wise people in this country to prevent unreasonable actions by the administration.
حتی تو فرماندهان نظامی عاقلان فراوانی هست.
Even among the military commanders here there are many people with wisdom.
که مانع از ایجاد جنگ جدید.
Who will stop a new war?
فکر می‌کنم شروع جنگ جدید به معنای پایان آمریکاست.
I think the beginning, the starting a new war will mark the beginning of the end of the United States of America. Many people can understand that.
البته فکر می‌کنم دوره آقای بوش دیگه پایان پذیره.
But I also think that Mr. Bush's administration is coming to an end.
آقای بوش یه فرصت دیگه داره.
Mr. Bush still has one other chance.
اون هم جبران کارهای خطای گذشته‌اش است.
To make up for the mistakes
he did in the past.
He has no time to add to those lists of
mistakes.
He can only make up for them.
اینم خیلی فرصت خوبی است.
And that's a very good opportunity to have.
من بهشون توصیه میکنم از فرصت استفاده بکنه.
So I would advise him to take advantage of this opportunity.
بالاخره آدم در دوره مسئولیتش چند تا کار خوبم انجام بده.
So that at least while you're in power you do a couple of few good acts as well.
این بهتره تا اینکه پرونده کاری آدم با یک فهرست بلندی از کارهای زشت بسته بشه.
It's better than to end one's work with a report card of failures and abhorrent acts.
ما حاضریم کمک کنیم بهشون در انجام کارهای خوب.
We're willing to help him in doing good.
خوشحال میشیم.
We'll be very happy.
And your nuclear program.
برنامه هسته‌ای شما چی آقای رئیس جمهور؟
وقت تمام شده. برنامه هسته‌ای ما صلح‌آمیزه.
The time seems to be over, but our nuclear program is peaceful. It's very transparent for everyone to see.
شما رسانه‌تون یه رسانه یه روشنفکری است. بذارید من اینجا بگم.
Your media is a progressive one. Let me just say a sentence here.
من فکر می‌کنم دوره بمب اتم به پایان رسیده.
I think that the time for the atomic bomb has reached an end.
شما اینو متوجه نمیشید؟
Don't you feel that yourself?
اون چیزی که الان تعیین کننده است فرهنگ و اندیشه است.
What will determine the future is culture, it's the power of thought.
مگه بمب اتم اتحاد شوروی رو نجات داد؟
Was the atomic bomb able to save the former Soviet Union from collapsing?
مگه رژیم صهیونیستی رو در برابر فلسطینی‌ها به پیروزی رسوند؟
Was it able to give victory to the Zionist regime of confronting the Palestinians?
مگه مشکلات آمریکا رو در عراق و افغانستان حل کرد؟
Was it able to resolve America's or U.S. problems in Iraq and Afghanistan?
دوران بمب اتم تمام شده.
Naturally, its usage has come to an end.
اینا خیلی اشتباه میکنن پول مردم رو صرف بمب اتم میکنن.
It's very wrong to spend people's money building new atomic bombs.
این پول باید خرج آسایش و بهداشت و آموزش و اشتغال و تأمین اجتماعی بکنن.
This money should be spent on creating welfare, prosperity, health, education,
and employment.
And as aid, that should be distributed among other countries. To destroy the reasons for war. For insecurity and terrorism.
مطمئن باشید هر کس دنبال بمب اتم هست یک عقب افتاده سیاسی است.
Whoever who seeks to have atomic bombs more and more is just politically backward.
و اونایی که ذخیره کردن 10,000 و هی نسل نو رو می‌سازن عقب افتاده تره.
And those who have these arsenals and are busy making new generations of those bombs are even more backward.
به نظرم یه خیانتی به جامعه بشری اتفاق افتاد.
I think a disloyalty has occurred to the human community.
انرژی اتمی انرژی پاکه.
Atomic energy power is a clean one.
انرژی تجدید شونده و مفیده.
It's a renewable one and it is a positive.
تا امروز بیش از 16 کاربرد مفید داره.
Up to this day we've identified at least 16 positive applications from it.
به خاطر شدت استفاده از انرژی فسیلی تمام آب و هوای جهان تعادلش رو از دست داد.
We're already aware that the extent to which we have used fossil fuels has imbalanced the climate of the world.
آلودگی‌های شدید و مریضی‌های شدید.
Brought about a lot of pollution as well as a lot of diseases as a result.
چه اشکالی داره همه کشورها از انرژی اتمی استفاده کنن، نیرو تولید کنن؟
So what's wrong with all countries having peaceful nuclear power and enjoying the benefits of its energy?
یه نیروی سازگار با محیط زیست است.
It's actually a power that is constructively environmental.
این قدرت‌هایی که بمب اتم دارن اومدن گفتن انرژی اتمی مساوی است با بمب اتم.
Those nuclear powers have come and said, well, the having nuclear energy is the equivalent of having an atomic bomb pretty much.
یه دروغ بزرگه.
This is a big lie.
Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Tomorrow, part two of our conversation. But right now, we're joined by Ervan Abrahamian. He's an Iran expert, CUNY Distinguished Professor of History at Baruch College, City University of New York, author of a number of books, most recently, A History of Modern Iran. Welcome to Democracy Now! Can you talk about both what the Iranian president said here and his overall trip? Was it a different message this year?
No, it's very much the same complacency that, you know, everything's fine. There may be some problems in Iran and in foreign relations, but overall, Iran is confident. And is basically the mantra of the administration in Iran is that no one in their right senses would think of attacking Iran. And I think the Iranian government's whole policy is based on that. I wish I was as confident as Ahmadinejad is.
And his dismissing of the situation, the human rights situation in Iran, basically ascribing any arrest to some lawbreakers, your sense of what is the human rights situation right there?
Well, I mean, he basically changed the question and talked about, you know, probably 2 million prisoners in America, which is, of course, true, but it certainly changes the topic of the discussion. Now, in Iran, you can be imprisoned for talking even abolishing capital punishment. In fact, that's considered blasphemy. And academics have been charged with capital offense for actually questioning capital punishment. So he doesn't really want to address those issues. And there have been major purges in the university recently. And of course, the plight of the newspapers is very dramatic. I mean, mass newspapers have been closed down. Editors have been brought before courts and so on. So I would find that the human rights situation, I would agree with the Human Rights Watch that things are bad. But I would like to stress that human rights organizations in Iran don't want that issue involved with the U.S.-Iran relations, because every time the U.S. steps in and tries to champion a question of human rights, I think that backfires in Iran, because most Iranians know the history of U.S. Involvement in Iran, and they feel it's hypocrisy when the Bush administration talks about human rights. So they would like to distance themselves. And Shirin Ebadi, of course, the Nobel Peace Prize, has made it quite clear that she doesn't want this championing by the United States of the human rights issue.
Big protest outside the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations, the Israel Project, UJA Federation of New York, United Jewish Communities protested. They invited Hillary Clinton. She was going to speak, but they invited Governor Palin, and so then Clinton pulled out, so they had to disinvite Palin. And then you had the peace movement inside meeting with Ahmadinejad.
Yes, I think that, I mean, the demonstrations outside are basically pushing for some sort of airstrikes on the premise that Iran is an imminent threat, and trying to build up that sort of pressure on the administration. And clearly, I think the Obama administration would not want to do that, but they'll probably have a fair good hearing in the if there was a McCain administration.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Part two of our conversation tomorrow, we talk about the Israel-Palestine issue. We talk about the treatment of gay men and lesbians in Iran. And we talk about how the Iraq war has affected Iran with the Iranian president. This is Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shrufal Dokadus, Aramata, Angelique Comet, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Miguel Nogueira, Mike DiFilippo, Peter Curry is our engineers. Tomorrow afternoon, I'll be at Johns Hopkins speaking in the evening at Morgan State University, and on Saturday at the Baltimore Festival of Books. You can go to our website at democracynow.org for those details, as well as for the transcript of our interview with the Iranian president and our full conversation on the Wall Street bailout. We will also link to the protest sites where people will be protesting around the country today. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.